Okay. In Pinchas over here, the second piece is an ikrim about what it means, hini noisnas brisi shalom. Because the words really are hard to understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him a bris of shalom. What exactly, I mean, they weren't warring to the best of our knowledge beforehand. So the ikrim says like this. V'chei nimtza shavtocha shaKadosh Baruch Hu maftiach latzadikim. Loses them a kim vasmoda to kore shalom. Eternity, things that are without interruption, things that are permanent, are called shalom. Ama Hashem is baruch al Pinchas, he knows his brisi shalom. Ulefia Kabbalah omer se Pinchas al yo, ze ha pirush shalom vasmoda v'kiyam lenefesh beguf. So that is, the shalom means that it is enduring and lasting. Now, how does that come to shalom? Why is enduring called shalom? Why is shalom a term that's right for it? So the Ikram explains, V'zeya kishitasmid ha-haskama b'na yisodes ha-feichim b'inyan shlo yigover ha-hefech ha-echad al ha-acher b'maskama zol shia shalom tosur sibas ha-hefzid. So the Ikram says a tremendous yisod, and it's a yisod on many levels true. Physically, the body is the physical body of a person consists of a sort of, let's call it an equilibrium between various different hormones, enzymes, processes, and so on. And as long as everything's in perfect balance, the body is perfect. As things start getting unbalanced, then you begin to have problems. And the body's deterioration over time, the aging, etc., is because there's a constant erosion, and there's a little bit too much fat, and a little bit too much sugar, and a little too little this, and a little too much of that. And that slowly begins to tear apart. But were the body to be in perfect equilibrium, it would last forever. Just like a building that's in perfect equilibrium would stand forever, but if there are a little bit stresses and strains from one side or the other, then it begins, the time erodes the bond and it falls apart. It's true on a community level. If someone has a yeshiva, somebody has anything, any institution, if the people there are perfectly balanced, as everyone has his place and everybody is doing his job, and the min, mekar, and the small doha are perfectly aligned and so on, it should endure. There's no reason why it's going to implode. But the minute you have it's not perfectly balanced, then slowly that begins to create the stresses, the strains that eventually implode the institution in the big sense of the word. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a bris of shalom, things that are in a state of shalom, which means they are perfectly aligned in perfect equilibrium, that makes for something enduring. I would add possibly the following. Aaron HaKohen's midas is Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, and so on. That's a tremendous midah, obviously, and that's Aaron HaKohen. But that meter in itself is not in equilibrium, because sometimes you just need to be strong or tough and so on. Pinchas was the Kohen who added an akuda of kanos, and that sort of perfectly balanced out the kahuna, and kahuna through Pinchas could now become a permanent fixture. Upshata kosos shnema lov. And that's the pshat that the Malachi speaks about the Kohen, about Aaron HaKohen, about the Kohen. A brisi oise ito achayim v'shalom. I gave him life and shalom. The piece we talk about is a perfect state of balance, which it means that it will be eternal. V'chein pshat hinecha sholechem sol yo'a novi yor'al ha'yos al yo'a dayin kayim v'guf nefesh. And when it says that Pinchas Zuel Yohu means that Pinchas had that power that he could endure the generations and so on. Okay, the next piece is a Shal Zetshuvas HaRashba. It says over here in the Pasuk, Lezerach Mishpachas Azarchi, and in Pinchas, over here, and it says, Ve'era, it's called Tzohar, and here it's called Zerach. So how do we explain the change? Avosharach Hilufin, Shetimtza Shom Biksuvim, B'dvorim She'ena Yonim Ischalfim, Eina Shaila. So the Rashba says, this is the Rashba, that if you find changes in psukim that do not affect the content, that's not a problem. Lifi She'ena Ksuvim Shomrim Hamilos Raka Kavonos. The psukim are not makbid on the words, just on the kavana.
Rebbe?
Yes.
How do we understand drushes of Chazal on changes of psukim?
Okay, well, we'll talk about it in a second. V'zeh yikafil b'gufe Torah. This is true about gufe Torah. Gam b'aseres adibris kara kein. Shomer and Zohar. V'lo yikpida Torah rak v'shmeres ha'inyanim. Gam b'shem is the other yikakein. You see it also by names. V'nei shimen, mona, pash, v'yigash, pash, v'eiro, yochen, v'tzeichar. Upachas Pinchas hefchlif tzochar b'zorach. Lazerach m'shvach l'zarchi. V'fi she tzochar loshen noga. Tzochar means light. V'loven kitzemes tzachar. V'zerach loshen noga. Lefikach leikpida Torah b'shmiras hamila. The Torah what didn't care about keeping the precise word. Kim sheshma kavana, as long as the kavana is there. V'hu kan v'kan loshen noga v'or. If we'll take a look in the Sefer, in the Pasha sheets, in Dvarim, there's an Eben Ezra that says the same thing, and there's a Radvaz who argues on it. Let's talk a little bit, Pinchas asked, and a little bit more of the Rashba. If so, what about all the Joshua's Chazal and so on? How do we understand it? So, I think the Rashba should be understood as follows, and Eben Ezra in the same degree. We've seen many times Eben Ezra says things in Pshat that are not like the Drasha Chazal, and he almost seems oblivious to Chazal or ignores it. And yet, more than one place, and we've pointed it out always, he writes very, very strongly that only Drasha Chazal are the emes. So the Inyan, I think, is as follows. There is a limud in Torah, a level of limud called pshat. The Brisker Rav used to say about Eben Ezra, he's the quote Mova Metzia, Menadechem, Elu Bale Mikra. In other words, there is something called Bale Mikra, Bale Mishnah. There's a world of pshat in Mikra, which is one of the layers of Torah, and it has its own rules and regulations, and it's a way to learn something. So in the many panim that Torah is in the Dreshes, whether Memtes panim or Ayin panim, in Pshat is a very important chelik of it. And in the world of Pshat, an imprecise name that carries the same meaning is not a problem. So, for instance, if somebody says, "Turn the lights on," and somebody testifies in court that he said, "Turn the light bulb on," or "Turn the bulb on," and we'd say, "Oh, it's perjury because that's not what he said," we would laugh at it because in the world of pshat, it's the same thing. There may be subtle clues as to why we used one term over the other term, but that belongs to a different world. So it is a correct, when a person is learning pshat, in the world of pshat, zarchi and tzarchi is the same thing. The names are not important. What's important is the name denotes some sort of quality of that mishpacha, and that's what the Torah kept. And it is correct when you teach it and the level of pshat, that mishpacha zarchi means tzarchi, because the Torah is not makbid on it. There's a reason, obviously, why the Torah changed it. I mean, the Kashmir could have cut and pasted the names from one Seder to another Seder. It's not that's not the issue, but we don't have to learn in pshat that it was something happened to the family or whatever it is. And it's important because we've pointed out before quite a few times where the world of pshat refers to the reality as our senses perceive it. And if tzachri and zarchi must mean two different families, we're going to have to say there was some radical change in the family. If, however, its meaning is true in the world of remes, so it's a subtle aspect of the family, but it's not the apparent, visible reality. So I think the Rashba, the Ibn Ezra, is us saying that in the world of pshat, when you teach a kid Chumash at the age of 5, you should say Mispachra Zachar Zachara Tzorchar. They're the same thing because they mean the same thing. So it makes no difference if I refer to the person as the policeman or the guard or the security agent, all the same thing. There is obviously a reason, but that reason belongs in the world of Drush or Remez, why it's different.
Rabbi,
yes.
How do we explain that by the Aseret HaDibros? I mean, Shamar V'Zachar seems to be somewhat different.
So in a big, it's true over there it does seem to be different. On a very loose form of pshat, they are the same. Keep the Shabbos, guard the Shabbos, you know, remember the Shabbos. They can be on a simple level for people not used to drush. Yeah, you know, keep the Shabbos holy, watch the Shabbos to be holy, you know. It could mean the same thing. It's not, both of them mean to keep Shabbos. It's only with the drushes that we realize they're relating to two very different aspects of Shabbos. Okay, the next one is it speaks about the dividing up the Yerusha, and it says that Yisrael was divided by Goro. Now Goro, it seems strange to us that we would, you know, it's one thing when you have no solution, the most you have in halacha, you have when there's an impasse, say, in an impasse in different, you know, rachayim, about who gets the omid, 2 yard sides, or you have the Chesh Mishpat, sometimes you throw goro. That is the halachic solution. It's obviously a solution when there is no other solution, when you can't prove rayas, when, you know, when without, if you have no choice, you throw a goro. So the, here, the Chatchil to make the Chukah Pigoro, why? Why didn't they sit down and say, what are the needs for each and every community, and how shall we meet it, and so on and so forth? Why Goro? Toshu Azal, Zeshem HaKosis, what Pasuk says, Midonim Yoshbis HaGoro, Uben Atzumu Yafrid. A Goro tends to quiet down Machlokes, and it's a buffer zone between strong people. The pasuk is praising and dividing something through a goro. It's a very good thing. So people will not have kindness for other people because it comes from Hashem. Like says the pasuk, "Bechek yutal asagoro, Hashem kol mishpote, ben atzum yafrid, ben amachlokis ben rivos, kloshan gisha atzum asecha." So Rebbe Bechaya brings over here this parasha. There's something very interesting over here. The in halacha, the Gemara declares about whether or not people have to be prompted to pay their dues. So karbanis, we say not. Paying somebody else, we say in mazik, we say yes. And the psychology is people are comfortable with giving up to Hashem, but very uncomfortable with giving up other people. And the reason is kind of simple. We perceive the other person as our competition, and we perceive his gain being my loss. Now, there's no such mitzvah where somebody else's gain would be my gain. If the other person gets the karka, I lost the karka. It's not mine. If we have an argument and he wins, I lost. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can feel comfortable saying, well, you know, I'm giving up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That really means that I'm gaining grounding points. It's a bigger mile of myself. I'm not in competition with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like when you go and ask a big, when you have a machlokes or a chavrus and pshat, so you fight bitterly. Then you ask Rav Gadol and whatever he says. It's not because, not really because you trust that to be the emes as much as it doesn't bother you. You never set yourself up to be in competition with that Gadol, and he's the absolute genius. So if he said, that's why it's right. Not because you said, but because he said it's right. So people, when they have it in Torah, and we have to divide up things, and you say, well, we think that his point is stronger than your point, and his needs are greater than your needs, and etc. That's very, very strong. People don't take easy to that, because that means I lost to you. You know, some sort of in the competition between the peers of me and you, I came out on the bottom. It's hard to swallow that. When it's a goal, Hashem said, I'm doing it's exactly a kosov. It's not understood why it is that he wanted you to get the land, but I accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Gzardin. That is the Mila of Goro. By taking it out of human reason, then I don't need to acknowledge other person as being right, but rather it's exactly a kosov, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Unfortunately, this is tragic, but I've seen quite a few times in Eretz Yisrael, there were people, chashuva people, who were brought to trial for doing X, Y, or Z, and they will plea bargain and admit that they were guilty and so on, but they will always present it in the following way. I've seen it a few times quoted. I spoke to Rabbi Yashiv, I don't think I'm guilty, but I spoke to Rabbi Yashiv, and he said this is the right thing to do to avoid the trial and all the terrible libels else I will bring, and I'm being mekayim what Gedol Yisrael said, and I'm doing it b'leib shalem. And you know, you look at it, and you can't judge anybody who's Rachmanis in a terrible, terrible situation like that, but you see the comfort of him, instead of saying, I'm as guilty as heck, man, I'm going to face a long life sentence, this, and plea bargaining will get me off the hook, which is sort of a pshat description of reality. The person has a better way of doing it. I'm really innocent, and Hashem knows I'm innocent, but Gzeres Chachomim is to a tzaddik like me is tremendous, and I accept it, and if I need to be most nefesh l'chayisol, I'm going to do it b'leib shalem, because Gedol Yisrael said so. You know, it's pitiful, and God forbid nobody should be in a position like that, but that's the mechanism of it. Doing something l'man Hashem is easier, even if it's Mesiras Nefesh, than giving in to the other who's getting the better of me. Okay, the next one is Rabbeinu Bechaya. And by the way, I guess as a Maimer Amusker, in human relationships, we have communities, schools, things of that nature. There is sometimes a blessing in rules and regulations that at time might make some mindless anomaly might arise. In other words, the rule or regulation will be mechayev or exclude or include someone that really shouldn't have been. It's usually preferable to do that because then everybody says, oh, that's rules and regulations, you have to listen to rules and regulations, even if they're stupid. But a person will feel easier to give in to that than to give in to this is what you ought to do. One of the differences in dealing with American and Israeli bureaucracy is an American will be sympathetic to your point, but will say, what can I do? We got to follow regs, regulations. We got to follow them, whether we like them or not, we understand or not, we got to follow it. An Israeli explains to you why you are dead wrong, and he's dead right. It's much easier to go with the American one because we all know the American rules and regulations are stupid, don't make any sense, the you know, it's wacky, but you know, as a law-abiding citizen, I've got to do it. The person feels okay with that. When you've got to admit that you really are wrong and that it really is wrong of you to do this in this situation, it's much more difficult. So there is, in dealing with people and larger groups of people, enforcing a yekish, a type of mindless listening to rules and regulations has advantages. And that's why, for instance, if you make a rule in a shul that you can't have this or that, and you enforce it even when it doesn't make any sense, you win in the long run, because then everybody is, you know, you told it, yeah, that's what it is, that's the, you know, that's the takanis, they don't make any sense, but we keep takanis. Okay, the next one is Rabbeinu Bechaya, and we're dealing here with the Parsha of Yerusha, and the Parsha of Yerusha is brought in by women, by Bnei Slavchot, and so on. Why? Well, this is a chelik of Torah that was brought into being by women. Nitzav Yisrael b'mitzvah zu al yedei noshim. V'yitochem lo'ima b'tam zeh l'fisha misa sibas hanachleis. The whole parish of Yerusha really shouldn't have been part of the Bria. If men lived forever, there would not be the concept of Yerusha. So since misa brought it about, v'noshim gom misa l'olam, Alkena is a ruah parsha nachlas because of it nashim. That's a parsha nachlas should be written through nashim. If you shall nachla no heges bechayim misibas hameisim, because nachla exists only because of misa. Umashe zochu lazeb no slavchot. Why would no slavchot zochu to it? Lefisho imechavos es haaretz anikas eretz Hashem amechune kneg eretz hachayim. Since Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaChayim, so they were especially zochah to it because they had chvivas for Eretz Yisrael. I want to explain this a bit. Why? I mean, it's good. It's just kind of, you know, like Eretz HaChayim, Eretz HaChayim, and so on. Yerusha is not just a, and we'll see it the next piece in the Sefer Chinuch. Yerusha is not just, listen, somebody's died, he's left over millions of dollars, we got to find a structured way, a civil way of getting rid of all his property. Well, let's figure it out. Let's have the children, so on and so forth. Yerusha rather is, many people have proposed that when a person dies, all of his things become hefker or go to the government. There's no reason why the kid should get it. That's been proposed by a lot of people. And usually by people that don't stand to inherit lots of money. So there is a sort of a logic to it. And the answer, the other side is, just if a person would be living forever, so he would get to keep his property forever. That's the way the Bria should have been. Now that Misa was Niknas, there is still a way of sort of eternalizing my hold on the property. And that is through Yerusha. We'll see the next piece in the Chinuch. Yerusha means that it's me through my children, through my close of kin, but it is some sort of still sense of attachment to myself. Eretz Yisrael is a place, for instance, there's something called, there's Nachla, which can never be sold. It can be sold and goes back in Yovel, because Eretz Yisrael contains some element of permanence. In other words, the concept of nitzchias, the concept of eternal and permanent, is shayach to kedusha. And at Yisrael, a person can own property forever. He sells it, yes, there's an olam shel yovel, and that goes back to him. So the people who have chvivas for at Yisrael are mekusha to some concept of chayim, which is eternal, really. And that's why the people who favored at Yisrael were the ones who made this parasha. One more chinuch. What's the point of Yerusha? Like we pointed out before, Yerusha is something which is a sort of a strange phenomena. If we get to keep the money we earn, because we worked for the money, we then invested the money that we worked for, we took a risk, and so on. You know, there's a way that the economy rewards the people that participate in it. But what about Yerusha? You did nothing for Yerusha. Why do you get to keep it? Mishrotzi Amitzu, the Chinuch says, "Kedei sheyeda ha'adam v'yispeinin ke'olam b'yad adoin mashkiach ha'b'yoysa." The world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ubertsono hato zoche kol echadach ne'olam b'chelek hanechasim shmas olamo. The acquisitions that we make during life, the things that we acquire, are hashkacha. Just as much hashkacha as who we are and what talents we have and capabilities are the assets and the resources we have. Umatanose baruch hu mevureches shetimashech lo'olam shetenalo. It is of the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's giving, they ought to be eternal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do things that are helter-skelter or temporary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is eternal, and the things he does should have been eternal. Im lo kimichet hakadmonis mitzvolam. What interrupted this process of things being eternal is Misa. Umipnei silu gufo. So yes, I lose my body at 120, but that's not a reason enough to lose out my property. And property is a matnas keil. I will tispashet me'leo beguf ha'mishtal shemimenu. It will continue to my extensions. My body has an extension, so there'll be b'no bito, son or daughter. V'imhu b'avono yomu subanim le'yolo. Let's say somebody dies and doesn't have children. Ru'uya birchas Hashem shetosh v'karv elof. It's royu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha goes to one that's closest to him. Ki gzois ha-bracha shezocha b'zeh. Because usually, the bracha that I was zocha, oschus ha-gormelo, either oschus was gorem, oschus ha-volsov, emakrovim lo yosef lo makish ha-mai shezocha b'nechasim. A person is naturally affected by close family, so we ought to be toila our bracha on the kesher we have with our family. L'chein b'stalek hu v'zarim en b'chetoi ruim akroim sheseh seliska zekan adam. So if a person dies, then he and his krovim should be the ones to yashnit, because they are part of who he was and why he was and so on and so forth. Let's see one more small piece. It says in the pasuk, "Sheyetzef nevah sheyovel lefnehem, v'sheyovel lefnehem sheyotziyem." So the pasuk says the king or the leader is someone who goes ahead of them. Yes. Yes, Pinchas.
What difference does it make to the individual? He's not in this world anymore.
You know, the difference is in our tefillah understanding. People will fight to have their children take over their positions and things like that. There's a sense of me continuing. You know, when a person fights that his son should take over the job that he has, like in a yeshiva in town, and it's a halacha. There's a sense in me that I want to benefit my child or my close one. There's also a sense that my legacy continues. If I'm running a business, my son will run it the way I would have wanted to. I want to see him keep building it, and certainly if it's a town and or a yeshiva, I want to see him continue the derech, and my son, I feel, is the closest to me in his continuing the derech. So there's a sense of, even though I physically may not be around, but at least my ruach is in it. One more piece, it says over here, the Sarabin Abachaya, it says in the Pasuk that Isha Sheyetif Neim Ashayovot Neim Ashayetzim Ashayviyem, and so on. So he says, "Vashayovav meshetim, he shall take them out, bring them back in, lo al yedei achad, not through somebody else, v'lo k'malchei ha'umos shemeshalcha chaylaseihem v'yeshu bateihem, ala k'moy she'asisi ani imsichem v'og shemar tira oisei, ogdei ashasi Yeshua, shnema v'yelech Yeshua ela v'yemu lo halona atam tzareinu, v'chein bedavid omek v'yotzev v'alefneihem yotzev v'ashach z'berosh." So Rabbeinu Bechaya stresses that the manhigim of Klal Yisrael were not directors that sat in the back and directed the peace in the field, but they did it themselves. It's one of the facets of Klal Yisrael's instincts. Our Anashim Gedolim, certainly in the yeshiva world, were people that they lived the simplest. They were the least demanding. Whatever it is that they demanded of a tzibur, they were the ones that embodied it more than anybody else. You don't have to have, for instance, you can have a very, very good basketball coach who is who doesn't play basketball himself, who either can't or doesn't like to, but he knows how to coach people. I'm sure many of you have had the experience. You go to a doctor, and the doctor tells you that, you know, for your health, you need to lose X amount of pounds or stop smoking. And the doctor himself is quite rotund and smokes away. And if you point that out to the doctor says, listen, what I'm telling you is true. It's your decision, but what I'm telling you is right. And if you want to, you know, I've made my decision, you make your decision, but it doesn't take away from the truth of what I'm telling you, that being overweight or smoking is not good for you. The, you know, so you could say the same thing. I could be sitting in, you know, regally and telling you his tapas mood is wonderful. But it is of the nature, Kalayasov's instinct about the Hanhigim is that they are the paradigms of living what they preach. And we don't readily accept, you know, the by and large, the vast majority of Gal Yisrael, you know, Avar and Behova lived an extraordinary simple life in keeping with what they preached. So the manig of Kaisel is the one who shows by example, and that's how he leads. Okay.